And of course, open lines tonight for you on Coast to Coast AM. Let's go back to Kristen in Orville, California. She's been on hold for a while. Okay, what was that story you were going to tell us, Kristen?
My husband said I was talking too fast, so I'm going to slow it down just a little.
Okay,
okay, so about 18 years ago, I was asleep, and I woke up about maybe 1 or 2 in the morning, and I rolled over, and I looked up, and there was a giant looming figure about 12 feet tall, all in black, and I swear to you, it was Satan himself.
What did he want? Your soul.
I didn't bother to ask.
I thought you were going to tell me.
Over.
I thought you were going to tell me a story about your arm over the side of the bed.
Oh, well, I don't put my arm over the side of the bed anymore.
Why not?
Because, you know, I always was afraid something under the bed was going to get me.
Exactly. I don't know why that happens, but you're absolutely right. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Open lines. What a fast night. I mean, rocket ship fast. I'm watching the weather right now because we got to fly to Denver to tape our 4 TV shows on Sunday. And they're really talking about big snow. The caller Paul was not kidding. Huge. They're canceling flights already. 216 flights already canceled in Denver at the airport. 216. Mine is still going, but we'll see. Greg in Dobson, North Carolina, wild card line. Hey, Greg, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you, George.
Sure thing.
I've always wanted to ask you, have you ever heard of a book called Matrix or Matrix Roman numeral number 2 or Matrix Roman numeral number 3?
It has nothing to do with the movies?
No.
No, I have not.
I've never found anybody that's ever heard of these books before. They're great big books. Probably 14 or 15 inches tall and about 600 pages. All about UFOs, about maps telling you where to go look for UFOs, everything you ever wanted to know about any kind of alien race. Just incredible book.
Who wrote
incredible
it?
Book. Valdemar Valdrian.
Valdemar Valdrian.
Valdemar Valdrian. Now, what I was told, I was given this book along with a whole lot of other information, including a videotape called, I forget what it was called now. I'll think of it in a minute. Anyway, I was decided in 1991 that I was going to head out to Dulce, New Mexico and see what was going on out there because this book said that there was an underground base out in Dulce.
Right, that we know about. And, you know, you're talking about Valerian.
No, this is Valdemar Valdrian.
Valerian.
I don't have the book anymore. I couldn't tell you how it was spelled.
Yeah, that's him.
Okay.
We're making him.
Well, it was supposedly what I came to find out is that it was written by a group of kids that had gone to school in places that were rich kids from California that had gone to school in places that you and I have never heard of. And when they graduated, they all graduated top in their class. And the government scooped them up and put them to work in different aspects of our government. And they would come home at Christmas and Easter and so on, and they'd all get together at this place, this rock they used to smoke pot on out in California. And they all started comparing notes and decided that they would write this book under the name Valdemar Valdrian. And start telling people where to go look for different things and give you maps and this and that. Anyway, I went out to Dulce, New Mexico, and I didn't let anybody know that I was going out there. My girlfriend and my mom and dad were the only people that knew I was going there. And I never stopped along the way and talked to anybody. But as soon as I got to Dulce, I was met by a law enforcement officer. I pulled up just beyond the motel. There was a Best Western Motel there in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled up just beyond the Best Western Motel and got out of the car. And I couldn't have taken more than 10 or 15 steps. And this car pulled up on me, and I could tell it was law enforcement because it had two blue lights back in the dash. And I walked around to the driver's side, and the window went down, and it was an Indian in there wearing sunglasses. And his exact words were, "My name is Anderson. I'm a federal marshal. I know why you're here. It would be my best advice for you to get back in that yellow car and go back to North Carolina and don't come back here."
Whoa. Did you do that?
The window went up. I'm sorry?
Did you go back?
Oh, yeah. I stuck around for the afternoon. It was just one big, weird experience the whole day that I was there. I was trying to get information out of people, and I stopped at the post office, which was across the street from the Best Western Motel. And I was asking an elderly gentleman about where I could find work, if I could find a place to stay overnight besides the motel, and just asking questions. And he said, "Son," he said, "you don't want to be in this town after it gets dark at night." He said, "It would be advisable to you to get in your car and go elsewhere."
Wow. Did he elaborate on that?
No. No.
What do you think was going on?
Well, with that, I decided that I was going to take a picture of my car in front of the post office and put the film in the mailbox and mail it back to North Carolina so that at least somebody would know that I had gotten there.
Right.
And if anything happened to me, they knew that I was in Dulce anyway. And I met a young Indian. I was sitting there. There's a grocery store right next to the post office. And I was sitting there. The entire town is made up of Indians. And I just happened to watch this one white girl. I just noticed her because she was a redhead and very fair skin. And she just stuck out like a sore thumb in Dulce. And I was just watching her walk across the parking lot. And this guy, I was sitting there with a camera in my hand taking the film out. And this Indian says, "Take a picture of me, man." And I looked up, and here's this Indian standing there, and he's making a muscle. Like he's showing me his muscle, and he said, "Take a picture of me, man." So I took a picture of him, got to talking to him. His name was Eric. And the funniest thing, he had a T-shirt on, and I'll tell you about that in just a second. I'll try and make this as fast as I can.
Okay.
He said, "Why don't you go inside and get some beer, and I'll grab her," talking about the redhead, "and I'll throw her in the back of the car, and we'll take turns raping her."
Oh, come on.
I'm telling you the truth, man. And I said, no, I'm not interested in anything like that. And he said, "Well, how about giving me a ride to my teepee then?" And I said, "All right." So he got in the car, and I drove a couple blocks.
Why would you drive him to his teepee after he said that?
Well, I wanted to get to know anybody that I could get to know in the town. I wanted to find out as much information as I could, and I wasn't scared of him. I thought that if there was a confrontation, I could take him. So I really wasn't too worried, and I just kind of wanted to get as much information out of anybody. I just wanted to meet somebody there, you know?
Yeah, but why him?
Well, I can't tell you why I do some of the things I do sometimes. When I was younger, I was not scared.
So obviously the girl was okay. Nothing happened to her, right?
No, nothing happened to her. All the houses in Dulce that I saw were really old and run down. I mean, it was like the roofs were caved in. The windows were all knocked out. It's a strange place. And I pulled up to this house that he asked me to pull up to, and there's an old Indian woman standing in the doorway, and the whole roof is caved in this house. And he said, "Well, thanks, man. Maybe I'll see you again sometime." And I said, or I asked him, I said, do you know anything about any UFOs around here? And he pointed back behind him at a big mountain, and he said, that's called Ducey Rock, because they call it Ducey. They don't call it Dulce. And I said, well, is that where all the UFO stuff happens? And he said, there's a lot of strange stuff happens up there, man.
Well, he was right about that.
Huh?
He was right about that.
Oh, listen. To make a long story short, George, I decided that I was not going to spend the night there.
Well, that was probably the smartest thing you ever did. Look, we get a lot of reports about that area. There's supposed to be, probably in that mountainside, something built in there. And these UFOs apparently come in, come out. But I got to tell you, once that guy tried to do that to that girl, I would have said, see ya, pal. Don't want anything to do with you. Next to Milwaukee we go. Carl, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Carl, go ahead.
Hi, George. I can still remember that fateful night where I pressed the AM button on the radio by mistake, and I was astonished to hear a gentleman named Art Bell interview Bob Monroe.
That's right, Mr. Astral Projection.
Hi, and I actually, over the years, I've been to three of their residential programs. You know, thanks to my friends to Coast, I have an incredible eclectic library that I've collected over the years. But the reason I'm calling you tonight is to tell you about a night flight over Lake Michigan where the plane, the turboprop plane that I was in by, was struck by lightning. I had a wonderful vacation in San Diego, flew from San Diego to Chicago in O'Hare, and we had just like a little puddle jumper turboprop to go from Chicago to Milwaukee. And it started to rain. And as soon as the plane took off, we flew into a thunderstorm. And it went from pouring rain to turbulence, where it was a ride, kind of like a ride on
a roller coaster.
Well, the most frightening roller coaster that you could ever be on.
Yeah.
Where we're going up and down. But the weirdest thing was that, I guess, in a plane you call it yaw, where you go from side to side.
Uh-huh.
There were probably about 10 people in there. And the woman that was in front of me with her children, after we started, you know, you'd have, like every single amateur scientist knows, that you have the flash of the lightning, and then you count the seconds till you hear the thunder so you know how far away the storm is. Well, it was like flash, bang, flash, bang. The plane is moving up and down, side to side. The woman in front of me is crying and praying the rosary in Spanish. We're all just kind of, you know, with our eyes closed, gripping,
oh my God.
And all of a sudden we have the... where you have this bright flash and like a cannon going off, and literally the plane probably dropped about 40 feet, and literally that was the longest 40 minutes of my life. And
white knuckle time.
Well, white knuckle time. You know, there's if you find out, you know, there's no such thing as an atheist in a foxhole, meaning everybody on that plane was praying. And I'll tell you, when we got and we finally touched down in Milwaukee, I remember all of us hugging that pilot, you know, because that was the most harrowing flight that I've ever been on. And absolutely where you know that, you know, that next heartbeat might be your last one. And I'll tell you, the power of prayer, man, it works.
I'm flying into a snowstorm tomorrow, and you tell me this story.
I know, you know, I was going to change the story as soon as you said that, but I thought, you know, this story has a happy ending, George, so.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing. Well, you know, first of all, if they don't think it's safe anymore, they don't fly. That's the bottom line. Right? Susan, Bakersfield, Scared Hotline, welcome to the show. Hi, Suze.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Yeah, this happened about 5 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, when I was had been grieving over the loss of my beloved cat of 17 years.
17's a good run, though, isn't it? for a cat.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. And I'm so happy for that, that's for sure. But I decided after a few days I needed to get up out of bed and go check the mail. And so I did. I got up. I was still wearing the same clothes I'd been had on for a few days. And that's all I wanted to do was check the mail. And there was this little girl at my gate that asked me if I would buy some cookies. She was about 10 years old. And I wasn't interested in cookies or anything. I told her no. And she was very, very persistent. So finally she just said, well, will you just look at my books and see if there's anything you like? And so I walked over there and I agreed to it. And before I could get to the gate, there was this huge, loud, crashing sound. And I look up, and about less than 100 feet away is this huge older model, Oldsmobile, coming flying at us at 75 miles an hour. That's what I later learned.
Look out.
Speed was. And it was, and I just knew that we were going to die. There was no doubt about it. And so I had enough time to put both hands over my eyes and my face and just scream, no, like that. And my thoughts were not in fear of myself dying, but all I could think about was this little girl's parents and how what they would feel and what they would be thinking, you know. That's all I could actually get in my head. And then another big crash sound occurred. And what had happened is a car coming from the other direction down the hill, that would normally have turned left to go down the alley across the street from me, turned right and stopped that car from hitting us. In fact, stopped so close to it that there was a V shape made it by the cars around that little girl right at my gate.
That was a miracle.
Oh, that was a miracle. I've had a lot of experiences in my life that I thought I should have died from, but nothing that bad. And if anything, that totally made me know that there was somebody watching me for a reason.
They sure do. We're going to come back and take some more open line phone calls, final phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I'll also tell you what's in store, of course, next week. Lots of programs coming. We've got the John B. Wells on Saturday, Ian Punnett for us on Sunday, and then I'll be back Monday for the rest of the week out of the cave in St. Louis. Weather permitting, of course. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we've got a great series of shows for you for the rest of the week and in the next week as well. So make sure you're part of Coast to Coast AM wherever you may be. And if you're not a Coast Insider and you want to be a member of the club, you may do so by going to coasttocoastam.com. Thursday, by the way, I'm going to do a program on drones over America and the right of the president to be able to fire on citizens if they believe that they may be involved in terrorist activities. So we're going to do a show on that. We're going to take your calls as well and get your views on many of those subjects. Let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Long Beach, California. Let's go to Derek in San Diego first on the Scared Hotline. Go ahead, Derek.
Hi, George. Long-time listener since I was about 12 years old. I'm calling from San Dimas, actually. But I had to call because I had a poltergeist experience myself. And it was November 11th, 2012. And I had spoken to my ex-girlfriend that night. It was her birthday. And I don't know if this had anything to do with it. My mother said that it might have attracted the spirit of the poltergeist. See, I was happened to be smoking cannabis that night. And I was playing games. It was the middle of the morning. And I heard a sound. And I thought, oh, it's just me. I'm just happy to be stoned or something. So apparently this thing was making sound for about 20, 30 minutes. I found out afterwards. And I heard the sound, and I kept ignoring it. Finally, around 5 a.m., I'm going to bed, and I hear something breaking into my living room. And I'm like, what is that? So I run in there, and as soon as I run into the living room, I see the doors behind me start slamming, opening and closing faster than I could reenact it. And the lights were flickering. I could feel the wind from the door slamming, and I literally, every hair on my body stood. I shrank as a man. I'd never been so afraid in my life. I thought little green men were going to be coming out the hallway.
and take you away.
Yes, I was terrified. I said, oh, this is it? I'm waiting for the grace. Next thing I see is this green or like a bluish smoke go from my restroom into my bedroom. And when I saw that, we just started praying to Christ. We did not know what to do. We opened up all the Bibles, and that was the scariest thing I ever seen in my entire life.
Well, let me tell you what's interesting is people who never pray surely do when there's events like that. They really are. Now we go to Brittany in Long Beach, California. Hey, Brittany, welcome to the program.
Hi. Oh, my God. I can't believe you took my call.
How close are you to the haunted Queen Mary ship?
I'm not that far. I'm like a couple of freeway exits away from it, actually. I haven't been there in a while, but I totally think it's haunted.
Yeah,
anyway.
It's creepy. It really is.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I live in Long Beach in a part of, like, I'm staying with my cousin, and it's called, like, a projects area. There's a few of them around Los Angeles, and there's some in the East Coast or whatever. But the weird thing about it is I came to stay with my cousin, and there are UFO sightings here all the time. One day, my cousin's boyfriend comes into the house, and he goes, "Hey, Brittany, you have to come outside and look at this." He's smoking a cigarette. So I go outside. And it's a formation of lights, orange lights that are about, I don't know, maybe 100 feet up. They're really, really quiet, which is strange because they're really, really close,
mm-hmm.
and they're in a V formation. That's not the only time that I've seen these. There's also different types of lights.
And let me ask you about this object, mm-hmm. first of all. Do you think it could have been one big triangular-shaped object?
Well, that's the thing. We have seen one big triangular-shaped object with lights along the bottom, and they do weird turns, like turns on a dime, things like that. But it's so regular around here that I'm not the only person that's seen them. People around here have seen them. They know when they're going to be here. There's also something that I observed, everybody says it's normal, something that looks like chemtrails in the daytimes. And it's very strange because this is like a heavily like urban populated area. And I always wonder why it is nobody's documented it on film and put it on the internet or something, because people would totally be interested in it. And I think the reason why is because, I don't know, maybe the poverty level, like people didn't have phones or cameras in order to like document it properly. But what I'm trying to do is make sure that next time I see some, I'm going to send some video in to you guys.
All right.
Because I'm totally like, everybody should be seeing this because it's on a regular basis and it's different types
of formation.
Okay,
we got to see that. I'm convinced there's a large triangular-shaped object, maybe several of them, and people are mm-hmm. seeing them all around the country. You speak really well, by the way. What do you do for a living?
Oh, thank you. I actually totally am not doing anything. I'm just like a 24-year-old sometimes student. I want to be either a physicist or a psychologist. But, oh, my God, thank you so much for saying that. I love the show. And I've been trying to call forever. So glad that I got in. But there's definitely a series of different types of aircraft. I'm not sure if it's military or if it's something extraterrestrial, but different types, huge aircraft and also small ones that go into like weird formations, turn very, very strangely from any sort of earthly aircraft I've ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely. We either have high technology that we don't release to people or they're coming from somewhere else.
Absolutely. And then the chemtrails are also a very strange anomaly to me because I kind of feel like because of the area, maybe I'm a little bit of a conspiracy theorist, but I sort of think that like they're trying to use it to control the people in the area because people are totally used to it, not reporting it and just thinking that it's a regular part of everyday life, or they're so busy with their everyday life that they don't say anything about it. That's up there. That comes there every once in a while. Yeah, there's also an artificial beeping that happens about once a month around 11:30 at night. When I asked about it, that happens every once in a while. It's a very nonchalant attitude, and I think people just don't have the time to look up into the sky, I guess.
And they don't know where that comes from. Brittany, thanks. We've got another text, and Tom's got it for us.
George from Sandy in Florida. Hey, George, I'm listening to the stories of people being scared, and I'm getting creeped out. Do any of your callers ever scare you or make you feel bizarre?
Remember Oscar, Tommy? By the way, whatever happened to Oscar?
You know what? He just stopped calling.
Yeah. I wonder if he's okay.
Hey, George.
Of course, in JC, whenever he is part of the program and calls in, who knows? But Oscar was a strange one.
Oscar was more scary.
The son of Satan.
Yeah, Oscar was more scary than JC.
Yeah, I would say he's one of the strangest calls we've had.
I agree with you.
We've had a lot.
Over the years.
We've had a lot. You know, we should put a reel together of that. Hey, by the way, I've got an idea to do a show. Do you know how many coast-to-coast guests have died just over the last 10 years?
Yeah, several. We have a list.
It must be 10 or 11. Easy.
Easy.
I need you to pick six of them. And I want to do a special tribute show to coast-to-coast guests who have died. And whenever you and Dan can get it together, so be it. I'll do it live, the inserts. Maybe not the right word to use when I'm talking about dead coast-to-coast guests.
They probably won't be calling in.
I'll do it live, but yeah, I need six of them.
Okay.
I mean, you look at that list. It's astounding.
Oh, yeah, there's some to choose from, definitely.
One of my favorites, Glenn Kimball, Al Bielek. They're all gone. Lawrence Gardner.
You know, Glenn called me about a week before he passed away, and he told me he was leaving.
Yeah, he knew it.
It's weird.
Can I, you mind if I tell our Joey Bishop story? this is great. When I first came to Los Angeles, one of the things I wanted to do was to do interviews with, the remaining Rat Pack members. Now, Shirley MacLaine, still alive, not really a Rat Pack member. She was just kind of honorary. But Joey Bishop was one of the Rat Pack members.
One of the best.
Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Dean Martin, and a little bit of Peter Lawford. They were all dead. Joey was the only one left alive. So I said, Tom, listen, you're my nighttime producer. I want you to find Joey Bishop. I want him on the show. Great history. So, Tommy went off and went to work and did his thing. Found out where Joey was. You sent him an email.
I did.
And didn't get the response. And a couple months later, Joey Bishop passed on. He died.
Correct.
So all the Rat Pack members are dead. Tom is going through his email from gosh knows how long and finds an email from
Joey Bishop
saying,
I'd love to do the show. Let me know when. But in fairness, I deal with like hundreds of emails.
I know you do.
And they're mostly
I'm not knocking you for that. It was surreal. And it was sad. I mean, here was his opportunity to have this Rat Pack member on to talk about Sinatra and Dean Martin and all that. And he wanted to do the show.
Yeah, he did.
And you missed the email.
I wonder if I'll get another email from him.
If you do, it's long distance.
That would be the best.
All right, see ya.
Bye.
Next up, let's go to Rick in Alabama, Fort Payne. First time caller. Hey, Rick, thanks for calling.
Hey, George. I really appreciate your show, buddy.
Thank you, sir.
Enjoy it.
Appreciate that.
I want to ask you a question, and I want to tell you an experience I've had.
Okay.
Here about 2 weeks ago, you was opening a show, and you said something about in Hopkinsville, Kentucky,
Edgar Casey. Blackbirds, and that was also the home of Edgar Casey, the prophet.
Right. Okay, here in August, I've been noticing it here in Fort Payne. Here in, since August, there's a flock, and I'm talking about a huge, huge flock of buzzards.
Thousands, I bet. Thousands of them, huh?
That are flying here in, that they're just circling in all the city.
Is this unusual?
Yes. Well, it's been going on since about August.
Yeah, I wonder what they want, though. They're doing it for something, some reason.
They're not flocking like, like 5 or 6 or 10 or something. I'm talking about like 50. And I've even brought it to people's attention and all. And pastors. I've brought it to their attention.
Are they aware of it now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's every day. Every day. They'll fly the mornings up till about like 10, 11 o'clock, and then you'll see them in the evenings from anywhere from 2 o'clock on until 6, 7 o'clock.
And then where do you think they go?
There's a big water tank there in town, and a man down the road told me that they was roosting. I've not seen them at night. I've not seen them roost, but said that they was roosting on that water tank. You know how, you know, George, you know how pigeons will do around a plant or something?
Mm-hmm.
That's why these buzzards are doing, and they're chicken hawks that's flying with them.
This is strange. I know animals are acting weird, almost as if they know something's going to happen. And, of course, you know, who knows what's going to happen with the New Madrid Fault and the San Andreas Fault and all those different areas. Something big could happen. Let's go to Eric in British Columbia. Got about a minute or so, Eric. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, George.
Hi.
I want to ask you just a scenario. Let's say there's an economic collapse or something.
All right.
And there's food shortages in the cities, right?
Yep.
And people are hungry, and some of them might be starving. You never know. And somehow, all that ammo and guns that was bought by the government gets into the hands of these hungry people. How do you think the preppers are going to fare if something like that happens?
Well, let me tell you something. When it gets that bad, when those people you cannot feed, it's going to be a disaster, whether you have ammo out or not. And the government, of course, bought the ammo for various departments and groups. I think the Social Security Administration bought them. For their own staff members who are, you know, those who are carrying guns. Look, if we get to the point where things collapse that badly, we're all in trouble, preppers or not. So you got to remember that. Well, that just about wraps up our open lines for tonight, except it's Friday night into Saturday morning, and you know what that means.
I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware, but now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. Turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the lights, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Call in with your space transmitter or your telephone. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Coast to coast.
And for Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.